Hey all, welcome to Nurse Stories. I'm John McCray, and I have a guest today who is Sam Billingsley.
Say hi, Sam.
Sam's a nurse that I work with every single day, unfortunately. No, she's great. But before we go into her story, I just want to give a shout out to our sponsor, who is Five Square Aesthetics. Five Square Aesthetics is an organization that helps nurses help get their dreams going in aesthetics. They provide the training you need, a medical director, products, supplies, everything you need to get going in your side hustle as an aesthetic nurse injector. So thanks, Five Square, for sponsoring us today. Without further ado, welcome, Sam.
Thanks.
How are you?
Thanks for having me.
Great. So we've done nurse stories with you before.
Yes.
But we're going to kind of shift it up a little bit today, and we're going to talk a little bit about how you got into aesthetics, because that's your big push right now. And you have a podcast too, don't you?
Yes. Unfiltered Beauty. That's with my coworker, Steph. So it's been fun so far.
Let's talk about some stories today. Now, you've been a nurse for quite some time, right?
12 years.
Yeah. And one of the things that we often talk, we'll talk about fun stories and stuff on this podcast. Let's talk about the things we don't like in medicine. And I'll let you start off. Why don't we talk about like the dangers of some of the job of nursing?
Oh, yeah.
Why don't you tell me some of the dangers you've run into?
Well, I mean, part of taking care of people are, you know, sundowning, mental health, drug abuse, a lot of these things we don't know until they're in the hospital. And I feel like a lot of people don't realize, especially at night, what we go through because there's less people around, less security, I feel like, and something called sundowning, and people kind of go crazy. That's kind of when things shift, I feel like. And so there's been a few times where we've had patients attack people at night. It's dark. One time we had a patient do their call light. And there's two patients per room. So it was, I think, the first patient when you walk in the door. And I was very much pregnant. And I was going to go answer the call light, but I'm pregnant. And so I'm struggling to get out of my chair. And my coworker's like, just sit down. I'll get it. And so she walks in and this elderly man kicks her and punches her in the stomach. Yeah, because he thinks that she's breaking into his house. And so in my head, I'm thinking, that could have been me. I would have gotten punched in my stomach, and that would have been really bad. So it kind of made me have anxiety after that when I'm going to answer a call light. Okay, so how do I do this now? What do I do? And at that same time, I swear, there were two other patients on either side of the floor that were causing trouble, like in the hallway yelling, wanting something. The other one was throwing things. And so it's just kind of scary.
So what happened to that nurse?
I don't really remember. I think she was okay. She probably had to go home or something. But it was a really big deal. But at the same time, you know, nurses have the opportunity to press charges. And there's been times where nurses have pressed charges. But what do you do when it's an old man that doesn't know any better? I mean, that's not going to solve anything or fix anything. And so it's just trying to figure out how to keep both of you safe, because you also want to keep them safe from themselves.
Idaho has a law on the books where it's a felony to assault a healthcare worker. And to my knowledge, it's never been used. Because the 99.99% of the assaults are these crazy people. They go nuts and they don't know what they're doing.
Yeah.
And the prosecuting attorneys don't prosecute them. So mm-hmm. Yeah, that law's on the book, but it's not utilized.
Right.
You know, charges aren't dropped, and it's tragic. Being pregnant and being a nurse is a whole nother level of risk.
Oh yeah.
Because it's one thing to put yourself at risk, but now you're putting your unborn child at risk.
Yeah.
So here's a story, and this was on our unit. We had a very pregnant nurse dealing with a very crazy person, and this gentleman had Hep C and all sorts of other problems, And so she goes in there to do whatever she was going to do. And then he goes crazy while she's injecting a medication. Needle flies out, sticks her. So now she's pregnant and she has a dirty needle with Hep C on it that's now in her body. Now think about what that's going to do to you mentally.
Oh, yeah. Your anxiety is going to shoot through the roof. You already have some anxiety when you're pregnant. You know, you're worried about your baby all the time. And that just brings testing. Oh, my gosh. Just being so worried all the time about this.
So she went through the testing and luckily never had Hep C. I mean, to this day, I don't think she ever got Hep C. But, you know, luckily the needle stick went into fat and, you know, fat's not very vascular. And so that, you know, long story short, she didn't get Hep C, but for months she's worrying about it and she's going to have a baby that could potentially have Hep C.
Yeah.
Right. But yeah, I remember that like it was, it was yesterday. I think I was charging that night and I'm just like, holy smokes, this poor woman.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty crazy. Yeah. And especially I've been pregnant 3 times, but my last one, I wasn't in the hospital anymore. And I just feel like it was completely different level of stress.
What were you doing?
Aesthetics. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You don't have to worry about somebody, you know, throwing something at you in the aesthetics world, do you?
Right. And you're just, I mean, nursing is at the bedside is backbreaking. I mean, I have shoulder problems from pulling patients over across the bed from the gurney. And I mean, just the physical aspect of it, not to mention the mental aspect of it, the emotional aspect of it. I mean, there's things I'm going to remember for the rest of my life that have affected me in good or bad ways. And it's just a crazy, crazy experience.
One time I walked into a patient's room, call light was going off. Old lady knew what she was doing. I think she was rich, but she had this attitude like the society should be catering to her. Call light had been going off for a minute, and I walked in, and as I pushed the curtain to the side, I see a plate flying through the air, and like I was in the Matrix, I kind of did this like dodge as the plate like flew right past my head and smashed against the wall. And she was just so upset that nobody had responded to her in an appropriate amount of time. And she had another one in her hand ready to throw at me. And I got right up in her face. And she had this look like, this guy's going to beat me up. And I got in her face and I said, under no circumstances are you allowed to do that. If you do something like that again, the cops will be called and you will be hauled out of here. And we will not be put up with that. And she got all... Like that was the first time anybody's ever put her in her place in her whole life.
Yeah.
And she was a dream after that.
Yeah. I don't understand why people think that nursing is like, I'm catering to you. Like, I literally have to keep 5 people alive at night. You know, I'm sorry we can't get to you. We have less staff at night, more patients at night. And oftentimes I feel like we had a lot of responsibility because day shift couldn't get to certain things like chart checks and procedural checklists and getting patients prepped for the next day and all of this stuff. So mm-hmm. I just feel like there's a mentality that it's a service. You know, you want
it's like
food
room service.
And yeah, exactly.
And they want it
your
now.
TV and all of these amenities and things like that. And it's like,
They'll call you for everything. Can you tell me where the MTV channel is?
I've gotten called to scratch a back before. And it's like, okay.
So that reminds me of a story. We had this one nurse. She was wonderful. She had been a nurse for 20 years. She got called to scratch a vagina. That's a true story. Called, my vag hurts. Can you scratch it? And guess what? She did. She scratched this woman's vagina.
Bless her heart.
I mean, they don't put that in the job description. You may be scratching vaginas at some point.
Right.
Scratching backs. I've had patients ask for a back rub.
Brush their hair.
Oh, my gosh.
Wash their hair, which, I mean,
that's part of it,
right? Love, yeah, like, if I have time, I love, you know, spending time with my patients, but if I don't have time.
The hospitals do not let you have time. There's a rule in hospitals. You ask yourself this question, am I understaffed? If the answer is no, then you're overstaffed. And so they always staff you just under, and the goal is to get you just understaffed. So you're always understaffed.
Yeah. I feel like my last job in the hospital, that bedside that I had, they just kept adding on things that we had to do, but they weren't giving us any more staff to do them. And of course, I would rather have three patients and do their bed baths so that I could do a full skin assessment. That's what they were expecting us to do, that we do full skin assessments on five patients when we have limitations on time and resources. It's like, I would love to do those things, but I can't when I have so many patients and so many things to do, so many other things that you want me to do.
The beeps, the alarms on the machines.
Oh, yeah. Beep. Well, and I worked on a tele floor, so it was constant. I mean,
it's actually a thing. It's called alarm fatigue. Like, you literally stop hearing it. Yeah. There's so many beeps going on, you literally stop hearing it. Mm-hmm. Because you're just like, just background white noise.
Yep.
Crazy.
Yep.
Yeah, healthcare can be dangerous. Let's talk about things we don't like with healthcare, like the system. Is there anything specifically you don't like about the system of healthcare?
I mean, I would say, managed. Yeah. I mean, it's very money, all about money.
Oh, it's all about money.
And so, like we were talking about, you know, staffing and things like that. I mean, you know, the higher ups are making bank, and we're here doing the hard work, and you're giving us more expectations than we can handle, and there's repercussions for that. And we're trying our best, and it's just not feasible. They want to pinch pennies and things like that. Another thing I didn't like when I was in Hawaii was the union. Mm. I came from Idaho not having a union, and I just felt happier without. With the union, I feel like it limited me as a person. Outside of the hospital, I feel like the union just made my life a little more complicated and more focused on my job. Like, my life revolved around my job instead of, you know, having this job but having a good work-life balance. So that's something I think a lot of people love unions, but personally, having experienced both, I did not like it.
If you've had both experiences, and I've heard this before, people would much rather not work with a union than work with a union. I mean, yes, the unions can make you a little bit extra money, but there's a lot of downsides for that, especially if you're at the bottom of the seniority. Oh, yeah.
I worked in Hawaii for 5 years, and my very last year the year we moved, I was probably like in the middle of seniority at that point. After 5 years, we had a lot of turnover on our floor, understandably, but I was probably in the middle, and I only got 1 2-week vacation. And you have to plan your vacations in advance, and seniority, the higher seniority gets first pick, and then it trickles down. So whatever's left is what you get at the bottom. So you will never have Christmas off. I mean, you will. You had to choose your holidays. But, I mean, you would never, if you had to work it, you wouldn't be able to take vacation that day. And things like that. It was just very seniority-based. And if you're higher up in seniority, it's great for you. But for the most part, it's just not fair. It's not fair. And you can work just as hard as your coworkers and not get any of that benefit. So
100%. So we're in unions. How much more money did you make being a union nurse than a non-union nurse?
It's hard to say, honestly, because Idaho does not pay as much as Hawaii does for nurses. So it's hard to compare. I made a lot of money there.
Yeah. But was your lifestyle much different than it is here in Idaho?
It was awful. That's why we moved back to Idaho.
Right. So you're making a lot more money, but you're in Hawaii. Everything's more expensive.
It's so expensive. So, and it was, yeah. I mean, you had to be full-time. You had to be working. It was better to work night shift to get that differential. It was better to work weekends. You had to pull overtimes. Like, you were thinking about money way more than you would here, where you're just living your life and enjoying.
Well, here's what's interesting. Now, this is before COVID and before I left the hospital, so let's call it 2016. There was a report that came out that I read. Now, Idaho is one of the worst paying as far as a salary for nurses in the nation. Okay. At least it was back then. When I started off in 2011, I was making $21 an hour. Okay. But I had a house. My wife stayed at home. I had two cars. You know, I had a good life. Like, I was very middle class. There was a report, and this report said, what state is the best state to be a nurse in? Now, everybody always thought it was California because California nurses make tons of money.
Yeah.
But this report went in and they said, okay, how much does a house cost? How much does your lifestyle cost? What are your working hours, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And they took all 50 states and Idaho was number one. So yes, money is important and that's where unions come in. But the rest of it is important as well.
Being able to take vacations, being able to choose if you want to go part-time or full-time or whatever, because even if you wanted to go from full-time to part-time, it was seniority-based. So they had to open a position up, a part-time position, and let everybody apply to it, and it would go based on seniority. So it was hard to just, like, live your life the way you wanted to.
Well, and then on the patient side, you get these nurses in that are awful and you can't get rid of them.
Yes.
Right?
Absolutely.
And you're like, why is this person a nurse? And they have seniority. They can work whenever they want. And they're like, I don't care. I don't have to work hard. My job's protected.
It's a very long process. And it has to be documented. And it has to be in a certain way, in a certain order, for anything to even happen. But yeah, and I've worked with some bad nurses, so it's, yeah.
Yeah. The money thing's my number one gripe in healthcare. Now that I'm, I hated it in the hospital, and I was an administrator when I left hospital, and I would go to meetings, and our biggest issue was turnover. I mean, we were constantly turning over our nurses. I mean, the average nurse only stayed in their job for a year or 2 years in on our unit. And I'd go and I'd talk to the vice presidents and you know, the CNOs, and I'd be like, listen, there's studies that show losing a nurse on a unit cost about $60,000. Every time we lose a nurse, and it was 20 or 30 a year, we are losing $60,000. Why don't we just make our working environment a little bit less and retain nurses? No, that's a long-term strategy. They don't do long-term strategies. They do strategies by the day.
Yeah.
Like, okay, this is what our financial situation is today. We will focus on today and not tomorrow. And then they make awful, and it's just bad management.
Oh yeah.
And they wouldn't. They just didn't look. And I would show them the studies. Like, listen, this is real studies. Mm-hmm. But the money just really got to me, and that's why I got out of the hospital. I'm like, I can't do this. And then when I went back and got my DNP, and I was a nurse practitioner, I realized I can't work for somebody because it's always about the money. I will work for myself. And yes, even for working for myself, money is part of running a business. But is it a priority in our practice? No. You know, good health. I mean, good working environment. You know, working with people you like, low stress, that's the priority, and the money will come. My biggest... This for those of you that aren't in the healthcare industry, you're gonna balk at this. But Obamacare really screwed up our healthcare system. I mean, yeah, it gave access to health insurance for a lot of people, but it really messed up healthcare as far as the money portion of it is concerned. And one of the things I hate now as a prescriber, because I prescribe a lot of medications, is something called a PBM. Have you ever heard of a PBM?
No, I haven't.
A pharmacy. What does it stand for? A pharmacy benefit manager, I believe, is what it starts with. So Obamacare put restrictions on insurance agencies to where they can only make a certain amount of money. Well, they're all traded on stock exchanges. They have investors, and limiting how much money you can make is a problem for a corporation. So they had to get creative. And how did they get creative? Well, they invented something called a pharmacy benefit manager, a PBM. And a pharmacy benefit manager is owned by the insurance company, And they are the in-between the pharmacy and the insurance company. So what do? So let's say you're 50 years old and you just got prescribed a medication. Let's call it an anxiety medication, a generic anxiety medication. Or let's do a statin. Statins are widely prescribed. They're cheap. they lower cholesterol. So this statin drug costs the pharmacy for a 30-day supply a dollar. Maybe two. Let's call it a dollar. So it's on their $4 prescription list. So they'll buy it for a dollar, they'll sell it to you for three, and they'll make a little bit of money, and you go on your way. Mm-hmm. But let's say you have a copay. Let's say your copay is $15. Okay, so now what happens? You go to the pharmacy says, you give them the insurance card. Once you give them your insurance card, they have a gag order. They are not allowed to talk to you about pricing, okay? Because they have a contract with the insurance agency saying this. So you give them their card and they go, oh yes, we can give you this medication. And guess what? It's a $15 copay. So please pay me $15. So you pay $15. They get it. Now they're contract with the insurance agency. So if you would have given them a cash price, they would have charged you $4. Insurance is only going to give them $275. So they're going to make less money now. And what about that $15? It goes to the insurance company. It goes to the PBM. Okay. So now what happened? You are paying for insurance. You're going to the pharmacy. You're now paying another $15 for a drug you could have bought for four. The pharmacist is making less money and the insurance is making more. And let's say you have four medications a month. You just added another $30, $40 a month to your healthcare costs?
Awful.
Dirty.
Awful.
Dirty.
Yeah.
It should be outlawed.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be allowed. I mean, I don't have a problem with PBMs if they're independent of the insurance agency. Then the insurance agency is going to treat them much differently, right? Mm-hmm. They're not going to want to pay them $15.
Yeah.
Right? And they're everywhere. In fact, I just had a patient yesterday who's a pharmacist, and we were talking about this, which is why it's fresh on my mind. And he's like, he goes, there's a lot of drugs we don't even make any money on because of PBMs. The PBMs always make money, but there's a lot of drugs we don't. And that's why, I don't know if you heard of the news lately, but Walgreens is shutting down like 400 locations nationwide because being a pharmacist or running a pharmacy is not the...
Doesn't make money anymore.
It doesn't make the money it used to.
Yeah.
It doesn't make money it used to. And it's driving pharmaceutical costs up. The end user, the patient, is getting hurt by it, and it's a travesty. It's a travesty. I have a medication I prescribe every day in my practice called finasteride. It helps with hair loss. We give it out literally every day. Mm-hmm. And before COVID, I used to buy it and give it to patients because I can get a 90-day supply for like $4.
Yeah.
Right. I would just give it to them and say, oh yeah, here you go. You know, here's a sample. Try it out. And then COVID happened and that supply drove it out. If they go to the pharmacy, it's the same situation. That pharmacist is buying a 90-day supply for $4, and you know, a 30-day supply is going to cost them $1.50, and they'll lose money on it. The amount of time it takes to fill that bottle, I mean, the cost of the bottle is probably more than the cost of the medication.
Yeah.
So they have to go in. They have to, you know, spend 5-10 minutes filling this script. That's an hourly rate of X, mm-hmm. and it just doesn't make sense anymore. So it's not a good thing when your pharmacy can't keep the doors open. Think about the rural areas in this country. Most of this country is rural.
Yeah.
Right? And you have this little tiny rural pharmacy, and that's like the closest thing for 30 miles. And if they close their doors, now what? Well, you're going to go to shipping or something like that, right?
Yeah.
So anyways, PBMs are horrible. If you're a politician listening to this, you gotta fix it. You got to fix it. So I don't know. That's my high horse for the day. But gosh, I mean, healthcare, the way we run healthcare in this country, insurance should be healthcare insurance should be like car insurance. What does car insurance do? Car insurance covers the crazy. I got in a wreck. Somebody stole my car. You know, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Does car insurance pay for your gasoline? Mm-mm. Does it pay for your tires when they wear out? Does it pay for your brake pads when it breaks down?
Checkups, no.
No, mm-mm. That's you paid for that out of pocket. That's how healthcare should be. The little things in healthcare should be out of your pocket. And the big things is what insurance is for. Cancer. Mm-hmm. I was skiing and I ran into a tree.
Surgeries.
Yeah. You know, that's what healthcare should be for. It should not be for the little things. It should not
And
be...
it should cover more. You shouldn't go into debt and lose your house because something crazy happened to you.
No.
Because you got cancer.
Yeah, it should be a catastrophic thing. And then you pay the little things. And if you have to pay for every one of your prescription medications, or you have to pay for your doctor's visits, or if you have to write a check for all these things, costs will come down because you'll start asking the question, how much is this visit going to cost? When a patient comes through my door and I'm taking their insurance and they ask, how much is this visit going to cost? I honestly don't know, because I don't know what contract I have with their insurance company. I don't know what they're going to get reimbursed at. I don't know what level of a visit I'm going to do. There's 5 different levels of visit, you know, from a nurse visit to a hour-long visit with your provider.
Right.
I don't know. I can give them a range. Yeah, it'll be between $100 and $400. But I honestly don't know at the end of the day what the insurance company is going to pay me and what the insurance company pay them.
Yeah, and that's hard with life to have that huge range and not know. And it makes you not want to go to the doctor.
Yeah. Like another thing that happened in my practice recently is, and we're right back to insurance, is we do a lot of migraine therapy, right? With Botox.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I'll buy Botox. Botox is very expensive. And then patients will come in, they'll get their insurance to approve their Botox for their migraine therapy, and we'll inject it and we'll send them on their way. And it used to be it's one of my favorite things to do, because I'll take patients from migraines every day to none.
Yeah.
Right?
It's amazing.
Life has changed. They lose weight afterwards. They're not stressed out any worse because their pain is gone. I mean, if you're a migraine sufferer, suffering from migraines every day, and you've tried everything, try Botox. It will change your life. And it works by just turning off the muscles, the tension muscles, and all those tension headaches go away. Well, Botox is losing market share because there's all these new toxins coming to the market, right? And so they're losing market share. So what do? They have investors to go to. They can't say where our revenues for Botox have gone down. That would be bad. So what do? They raise their prices.
Yes.
And so the last 2 years, they've raised their prices 3%, 3.5%. And so the first one wasn't a big deal. You know, they raised their rates. The second one became a big deal because now they're raised another 3.5%. So now I'm looking at the financials and I'm looking at buying Botox. For me to give a Botox treatment, I have to buy roughly $1,310 is my cost. So $1,310 is my cost for that medication. Insurance will pay me $186 to inject it. Okay? Which is fine. It's a 15-minute procedure. It's not terrible, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I have staff and stuff to pay. I definitely don't put $186 in my pocket. So I have to spend over $1,300 to get $1,886. Well, now, you know, they've increased the prices. Well, what if one case the insurance balks and doesn't pay, which happens? I'm out $1,300.
Yep.
If they say, oh, you know what? You missed a pre-authorization day. We were supposed to pre-auth before this visit. We're not going to cover that. And I have a contract with them. I can't charge the patient.
Mm.
So now I'm out $1,300, which means I have to do 7 more treatments to break even off that one little mistake.
Yeah.
And so it's now I'm looking at it going, gosh, this is a thing I love. I can help patients. But financially, should I be doing this in my practice? Because it's very tight. I mean... you know,
and it's a lot of work.
I mean, can you imagine, like, okay, I'm going to go to work today and I'm going to make, let's say, $30 an hour. That's going to make $360. But for me to go to work, I have to pay $1,500 every day for me to go make $300. People wouldn't do it.
No.
Right? Mm-hmm. So now I'm like, okay, maybe I'll have the pharmacy sell them the tox and they can bring the tox in with them and I'll just inject it there and then I don't have to worry about that anymore. So I think that's what I'm going to have to start doing, which is a complete inconvenience for patients. Why? Because now they're going to have to deal with the PBM. They don't have to deal with the PBM in my practice because I just dispense it.
Mm-hmm.
So now they're going to have to go to pharmacy. They're going to have to put a copay down, and it's going to increase the cost of the treatment, you know, because of the stupid financials. And then I realize, oh, this is what they want me to do. They want me to, because they're not making any money off the tox right now.
Right.
Right? They're doing this so that way I have to go through a pharmacy because they have all these contracts with the pharmacy and they'll make more money if they can go pick it up at the pharmacy. So unfortunately, I have to play that stupid game.
Yeah.
Financials in healthcare. Right. It drives me absolutely insane. So anyways, but yeah, that's my spiel. But you know, now I do aesthetics, and we are seeing aesthetic prices coming down in the aesthetic industry, aren't we?
Mm-hmm.
Lots more toxins coming to market. Yes. We went to a conference last week, a couple months ago.
Yeah.
How many toxins are coming?
I think three.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're all coming from Korea, I think I heard.
Yeah.
Two of them are pretty standard, like the Botox and Dysports and Xeomins of the world. And there's a new one that's a botulinum toxin type B.
Right.
Instead of botulinum toxin
type A. So is that the one? I think that's the one that kicks in right away, mm-hmm. but it doesn't last.
Yeah. It only lasts, I think, a month.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, maybe for like some temporary situations, like if you're in the hospital, I can see where that would work. But for aesthetics, it's not going to work.
Yeah.
Like maybe you're having like muscle spasms.
Right. Or like a really bad headache. You just need to go
away. I can see that working.
But only a month.
Ugh. Yeah, it's not going to work real well. But I don't know. I don't know what those toxins are going to look like. They're going to be probably very similar to the ones we already use. But what's going to happen? They're going to eat up more market share, which mm-hmm. is good for patients because it'll bring prices down.
Yeah.
You know, the last new toxin that came out, Daxxify, significantly cheaper than Botox. It's almost half the cost of Botox for the practice. And so you're going to see a lot of practices adopting that because they'll make better returns
right.
on it.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of my patients don't really ask for Botox anymore. Mm-hmm. It's very rare. I think people just have branched out and learned that there's other brands that do better just as much.
Yeah.
So cheaper. So, yeah.
Well, don't be a stranger, and I'd like to come back if at all possible.
Yeah, definitely.
Perfect. All right, thanks.
Thank you. Bye.